Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Gym Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKee, for you. This is episode number 206. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. I really appreciate those of you that help share the podcast on social media and leave ratings and reviews. That doing that helps me help as many coaches as I can. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically InTech, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with people that I believe in, and InTech is definitely one of those companies. Super excited to have a friend of mine on the show today, John Welburn. John and I are just, you know, kind of two kindred spirits. I mean, we know a lot of the same people. We've had a similar path, about the same age, the whole deal. And he's a guy that I just respect in a tremendous way for him as a player. I mean, 9-year vet in the NFL, you know, played with the Eagles, the Chiefs, and the Patriots, you know, played at Cal. He's the CEO of Power Athlete HQ, been with CrossFit Football, Johnny Wad, Well Food Company. Seminar speaks, does it all. And that's part of what, you know, connects the two of us. I mean, I think we're, you know, two guys that just have this kind of entrepreneurial type spirit, but is rooted in, the history of strength and conditioning. And so, man, super, happy to have you on the show. Appreciate you coming on, brother.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Jai, out of all those, you know, experiences, I mean, football, college, you know, power athlete, CrossFit football, you know, all those different things. Which one of those best defines you as a person, the person that you are now?
I really think power athlete does. I mean, you know, for so long in my life, I subscribed and really identified as a football player. And even though I really have never been a huge football fan, and I know people laugh when they hear that, I really didn't know all the rules and really wasn't a student of the game when I first started. I mean, obviously, as you become a professional, you almost have to become really a student and you know, look at it very cerebral. But, you know, going into football, I remember when I first went out there, I really didn't understand the game, and I didn't really know all the rules. I didn't really like it as much in terms of, like, you know, snaps or whatnot. I just knew that somebody was going to give me some armor, and I got to go out there and basically beat people's asses for 3 hours. And as that went on, I got to go to college, and I was really fortunate to get a scholarship to go to Berkeley. And I remember my dad being like, "So wait a minute, they're going to pay you to go to school?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Geez, that's a good deal. You think you can do it?" I'm like, "Well, yeah. It's just got to be like bigger dudes to beat up, right?" And you know, I got to go to Berkeley. Like I said, I graduated in 4 years and did my master's in my fifth year, and then got drafted to the Philadelphia Eagles in the fourth round. And I remember going out there, and, you know, all of a sudden you go to the NFL, and these guys are so meticulous in terms of their knowledge. And I remember people asking me questions about, you know, offenses and all this. And I'm like, you know what, man, I don't really know as much as these other guys. I just know that as long as I beat the dude in front of me more times than he beats me, I'm going to stay here. And I was the starter by the first game of my rookie year with that mentality. So I knew I had a big learning curve to pick up, but really the fact that somebody paid me an exorbitant amount of money to go out and beat people's asses every day was really what I kind of subscribed to and what I really loved. And when the game ended and I didn't get to do that anymore, I was okay, because I never really heard the crowd anyway and could have cared less for the fame and the fortune. I just was more into actually the physical pursuit to just beat people's ass. So when I retired and started doing something else and started Power Athlete, it just kind of, that focus shifted. And at that point, it really kind of, you know, forced me or allowed me to really reflect back and see what I did in terms of just being efficient at my job and you know, strength conditioning and training and running and speed and all the things that I did to really maximize my training. You know, I was always very cognizant of what I was doing and you know, understood that on a very, very deep level. And when I got out, and it was something that I could explain to people and hopefully take other people on that same journey.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you and I share a lot of similar background. I mean, you've gone through all the different, you know, philosophies and programs. And one of the things that, again, that you and I identify the most with is your constant pursuit of kind of figuring out the different methods and what works, and taking a piece from here and a piece from there and mashing it together. You've had a chance to work with a lot of different athletes. You've had a chance to work with a lot of coaches through your program. What's maybe the biggest mistake you've made in coaching per se?
Well, I always like to refer to kind of my experience as like the Jeet Kune Do of strength conditioning. And, I grew up, I was born in 76. And, I started martial arts when I was, 6 years old in the early 80s, and was always a fan of like the Bruce Lee movies and, Kung Fu Theater on Sundays. And, Barry Gordy's Last Dragon was like a huge movie for us.
That's a great movie.
I like that. Oh, it's still my favorite to this day. And that, like, that training piece. And I remember when I was about 10 or 12 years old, I stopped training at this in Shotokan. I got into kickboxing, and after like about 2 weeks of kickboxing, I thought kicking was stupid. I just wanted to box, and that really kind of pushed me in that direction. And I think that's where a lot of my skill set came from playing football. But like you said, I've had this like really interesting, diverse opportunity to have trained with some of the best coaches in the world. I mean, I as a young 14-year-old kid, I was training in this guy named George Zangis' garage, and George was the U.S. powerlifting coach, and Marathon Nutrition invented the super suits and the wraps, and we trained in his 3-car garage until I went to high school, and then I went to Berkeley and had some great strength coaches, and then got into a full Olympic lifting program with Todd Rice, which was super impactful because it was 180 degrees different from what I had done at high school and leading up. And then transitioned and went and, trained with Mike Wolfe and Tom Canavy at the Eagles, and then worked with Rafael and the guys at, Rafael Ruiz, and then also the guys out at Verstegen, out at Athletes Performance. And so along the way, I worked with like such different people that were really important. And I'll tell you, I think the biggest mistake that I saw that I made, and also I think a lot of strength coaches made, is that they get stuck in kind of one rut, like this is who I am, this is all I do, and they don't necessarily continue to learn and expand. And that was something I really appreciated about Rafael and some of the guys I worked with a little bit later, in that they weren't just steeped in one thing. It just wasn't snatch, clean, and jerk. It just wasn't this. I mean, they had a I almost looked at those guys as like master craftsmen. They had every tool available to be able to craft anybody into anything. And I think for a lot of strength coaches, they just have one tool. That's with the CrossFit, it's just the hammer. When you walk into a CrossFit gym and you work with CrossFit people, their tool is a fucking hammer, and they use it, and they drill and they grind and they literally pound people, like heat the metal, pound it. And they're like blacksmiths that are doing nothing but just making horseshoes. And, what I really was looking for, and especially when you start training, high level Olympic professional athletes,
right?
You just can't bang the steel. You got to be able to, have every tool in the toolbox, and you have to be a master craftsman. And I think, education and opportunity, and really going and interning and working and reading and just looking to expand your horizon. And unfortunately, that isn't done on the internet, and it's not done through chat rooms, and it's not done through books. At some point, you got to pick up, you got to go, and you got to actually meet people, start having conversations, shadow and watch, and go take field trips. I mean, go do internships and really just get out of get out your comfort zone and go do something. So I think coaches, the biggest mistake I've seen is that just that idea of like, hey man, I got one tool and I'm just going to use this tool because that's all I know.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that that's, that when you're forced, like you're forced as a player to kind of learn different philosophies. And I think what happens as strength coaches a lot of times is you end up going down a specific path based off your one experience as an intern. And then you just kind of stay in that focus. And I was very fortunate. I went from, training with Istvan Javorek, Olympic lifting, to Marcus Hanovich, that was pure high intensity. And that complete shift was paramount in my development as a strength coach, just because it showed me that both worked. I mean, we won games in both ways, and now what could I pull from each to be successful? And you've done that. And, that's one of the things that's been just really cool about you, is that you're not – you weren't your traditionally trained strength coach. I mean, you didn't go – what was your degree in college?
I was a rhetoric major, English philosophy.
Yeah, so I mean, you got this kind of different kind of path, but I mean, you and I have talked shop, and you're a freaking legit dude that way. Your quest for knowledge is really what's admirable, and part of that quest took you down the CrossFit route. And I think a lot of coaches, strength coaches – They first don't understand CrossFit, so they shun it because of that, or, you know, there's obviously some challenges from an athletic programming standpoint, they'll shut it for that. But there's a lot of things about CrossFit that are really great. I mean, the fact that, you know, the culture, I mean, you want to have a freaking, you know, a 100-pound woman scratching your eyes out talk bad about a CrossFit gym. You know, you want to have, you know, the ingenuity that's happening, you know, with equipment and products and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of CrossFit influence there as well. So there's tons of positives. What drew you to CrossFit, you know, and then what did you kind of take from that in this journey, this quest for knowledge that you have?
Yeah, I've always been hungry to learn. You know, unfortunately, when I was at Berkeley, it really wasn't feasible to do many science. You know, I took a bunch of nutrition science, and I was always fascinated with that and wanted to do a little more of the science approach. But a lot of the labs and a lot of the things were just in the afternoons and just kind of undoable playing football.
Right.
And I ended up finding a really good degree for me, which was, rhetoric major, like, which is an argumentative English philosophy degree. And it was like, it allowed me to read, you know, anywhere from 25 to 40 books a semester, which was awesome because I love to read. And that was kind of gearing me up to go to law school. And I graduated early and was working on my master's in my fifth year, and I got drafted. And the idea was that I'd probably go to, you know, play in the NFL for a year or two, come back and go to law school and, you know, have a little bit of dough in my pocket so I didn't have to be a super poor college student again.
Right.
And that ended up turning into 10 years. And just because I was playing in the NFL, you know, it's not as if learning just stops. And for me, I remember when I was in college, I read a book called The Book of Five Rings by famous samurai Mushiashi. And in that book, he talked about Bushido and the ability to, you know, focus and dedicate your life to the mastery of one task. And I remember thinking, like, if I'm going to take anything from this book, it's the idea of mastery of a task. And I chose my task is basically offensive line and playing football. And then when that happened, then you become educated in everything. And, you know, like you, I came out of, Todd Rice's program, which was straight up, you know, Olympic lifting, speed development, snatch, clean and jerk. And then I go to the Philadelphia Eagles and, you know, walk into a, you know, Penn State inspired high intensity HIIT program with machines.
Right.
And, like those 180 degrees. But what was cool is that, you know, Tom Canavia and Mike Wolf were smart enough to look and say, hey, you know what, like, here's a dude that banks free weights. So we're going to, you know, allow this, you know, young 23-year-old kid who thinks he knows some stuff to be able to, you know, add some things to his program because here's what he had done. And they were smart enough to say, hey, you know what, we know what you did to get here. We don't want to change that. We just want some stuff. So really just seeing the flexibility and the fact that these coaches were willing to work with me a little bit and kind of, I acquiesced to them and they did a little bit to me, just showed me that, you know, that there's enough similarities within training styles that you can kind of blend them all. And at that point, I just was really fortunate to train with some great people. And, being fairly analytical, I'd always ask questions. And whenever we would do things, I would always ask for, like, hey, where can I go back and read more? And, you know, I think I read, you know, Super Training fairly early on. And I remember, as a young 14-year-old kid, every football player has done, you know, mat drills and conditioning. And I remember, you know, we used to have to do a bunch of like heavy farmers walks after we trained with Zangus. And I remember reading about, you know, GPP and general physical preparedness and, conditioning and whatnot in Verkhoshansky's books. And that was something that I always looked at. And we were talking about earlier on the podcast, I made this observation that the guys that didn't train in the offseason, that didn't run, that didn't condition, that didn't come in shape, always invariably got hurt during training camp.
Right.
And I remember like kind of just noticing, and it was like, you know, people like, oh, and they always say, well, that guy got hurt, he's out of shape. And I remember being like, well, what's in shape? Is that passing the conditioning test? Because those guys passed the conditioning test, and these hard or questions I would ask, you know, coaches, offensive line coaches, and offensive line coaches don't want to talk about this shit. Even strength coaches don't want to talk about this, and the trainers don't want to talk about this, and nobody wants to talk about it.
Right.
So at that point, I took it upon myself to be like, you know what? Not only am I going to win every conditioning test I'm ever going to run, but I'm going to come in the best physical shape I could be. So I realized for me personally, that wasn't going to happen with the team. So I went down, I lived in Florida, and I trained with Rafael Ruiz. And the training that we did with Rafael was based off of one very simple principle, which is, and I always joke because Louis Simmons says this, to master Kung Fu, the training must be severe. And to train with Rafael, and you know, Rafael is a good friend of Ron Anai's, will know that the training with Rafael is severe. And if you come out the other side, you will be, you know, very good. So, that stuff really kind of started for me. And then when I retired and CrossFit approached me about, developing a sports specific training program for the CrossFit market, it was easy for me to go back and look and say, all right, what are these key principles? What's CrossFit trying to do?
Right.
What do I understand and how can I improve upon it? And then that's how we developed a program for these guys. And it just was really interesting because the one thing that really attracted me to the CrossFit market, like you said, was literally commitment and passion. Here was like a community of hard chargers who I didn't have to convince to go out and work hard. Right. Like we'd already had that conversation. If you were standing in the CrossFit gym, you're ready to train, you knew you were going to bust your ass. What they needed was they just needed more direction. They needed more strength conditioning knowledge. They just needed more physiology. And they needed a long-term goal. Like CrossFit's very, right. Lose the forest for the trees. Like, what am I doing today? I can't see past, the next 20 minutes. And what I really brought into CrossFit was the idea of adding some periodized strength conditioning templates where, we were going to cycle volume and intensity. We put together strength templates that were based off of, basic movements like a squat, a press, a pull. We started talking about, X, Y, and Z axis in terms of bilateral hip hinge, stepping and lunging. We started talking about vertical press, horizontal pulls. I mean, just basic strength conditioning knowledge. And you might as well thought we were, bringing, fire to, primitive people. And people really ate it up. And we got a lot of people strong and got them better. And the interesting thing for me was, or at least when I looked at it, what was familiar for CrossFit was that idea of like the better shape you're in, the less you'll get hurt and the more you can do. But you can't be in such good physical shape that all of a sudden you start kind of seeping away from like the strength and the power and the speed. So then you start looking at like training as this almost like an EQ where you're like trying to turn up all these little knobs. And if you jack the conditioning up so high, you get like a conversion of fast twitch, muscle fibers to slow twitch just to be able to handle that volume of load. Right. So there became like this kind of turn them up and kind of get this like perfect harmony. And I think that's what we did a really good job of, is finding the sweet spot and getting people to really develop. And then strength coaches, a lot of people were pissed about it. But I always said, man, like, if you want to go out and really make a difference, stop preaching to the converted. Right. A lot of strength coaches just want to go to other NSCA events and go here, and they want to sit around with their buddies who believe exactly what they want and talk about how smart they are and all these principles. And everybody's like, harumph, harumph, harumph. I wanted to go out and bring strength and conditioning to people that didn't understand it, didn't want it, and were kind of against it. So I looked at it like the best way for me to learn my craft is to go out and literally convince people that believe that conditional strength and conditioning doesn't work. And that was kind of CrossFit's message for a long time. And we went out and converted a fuckload of these people. And the way we did it was just showing them that we can build a better mousetrap, and that if you actually adhere to the principles of evolution, and it's a big way of saying it, but like, right, you adhere to these principles of like driving adaptation through stress, dude, you can pretty much accomplish anything.
Right. Well, I think one of the things that probably, attracted both you and me to CrossFit is the intensity factor. Cause I agree with you. I mean, you go and as a player, that was the same thing. I just wanted to freaking drop myself into grease every day and get work as hard as I possibly could. And if I couldn't do anything else, then that was a good workout. And obviously through coaching and education and all that, I've learned that there's a balance there. But I think with the onset of all this technology and just human nature and state of the world right now, intensity is going by the wayside sometimes. And I guess my question to you is, where's the freaking intensity gone? Where is it gone with our pro athletes and our elite college athletes?
Well, the what's pretty interesting is, so we moved right around the end of the year, we moved from Newport Beach out here to Austin, Texas. And so we've been in the process of building a new facility for Power Athlete. And, the building's actually going up and we should be here done in the next couple of weeks. And so I've been training at a couple different places, one of which is a Gold's Gym. And it's pretty interesting. I haven't really trained in a, Globo Gold's Gym, kind of that commercial setting in a long time. And the one funny observation I made was that people have no concept of relative intensity.
Right.
So people look at intensity and as we know, there's a few different variables we can look at. We can either look at like intensity in terms of 1 RM percentage, like how heavy you're lifting. You can look at intensity in terms of like volume and say, okay, I'm going to up my volume. That's in terms of attaining intensity, or you reduce rest period.
Right.
So you can either cut your rest periods down and do more work in a shorter amount of time. You can do more reps, or you can jack up the weight. And what's pretty interesting is that in the global gym, Gold's Gym environment, the only variable that people will ever do is they'll add more reps to a movement. So you'll go over there and watch a guy go over and put 95 pounds on a deadlift, and he'll try to do it for like 10, 20 reps. Maybe the next time he comes in, he tries to do it for 25 reps.
Right.
Like the thought of adding weight to the bar or increasing time duration, because the standard, you know, there's like a law, like if you don't rest at least 3 to 5 minutes between a set, I think they throw you out of the gym.
And get a cup of coffee and talk to the
gym. Yeah. And like just this observation of like no relative intensity. And like here's so the machine I hate the most in the world is the step mill. So like I'll like punish myself for 20 minutes, try like a couple days a week. I'll get on that step mill and just fucking hike up it. And there was a lady who was next to me who was on level one, and she was walking up, and I'm trying to like basically kill myself at whatever level 10, and I'm watching her. And so instead of like hitting the arrow up, what does she do? She tries to walk up it sideways, and then she tries to walk up it sideways the other way. And then she turned around and was trying to walk up it backwards.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm over there watching this lady who's not breaking a sweat. And the only way that she's trying to ramp up intensity is by changing the movement pattern in which way. And all I wanted to do was like go over and just start like hitting her button until she got up to the point where she was like sprinting up it, ready to have a fucking coronary. And that's just a good observation. And I think the problem becomes is that there's a lot of gym folklore, and I think there's a lot of bullshit. And I think people have just subscribed to this idea. Like, I mean, my favorite is I've never met so many people that were so fearful of the overtraining boogeyman that they are like, oh, you know, I can't overtrain or this. I mean, it's like, dude, fucking ditch your protein shake once. Right. Train past the point where you think that you should. And if you get burned, then take a step back. So I think that's a – yeah. And I'll tell you, with in terms of professional athletes, I think the problem has become that the salaries are so high now that you have strength coaches that are so terrified of hurting people that they rather – almost play on this side of the line where it's like, okay, I know what I want to do. If this guy's not ready, I'm going to play on this side, because if something happens and this guy gets hurt, he gets pissed off or whatnot. I think that's just kind of where it's gone. And, you know, I hate to say that, you know, the NFL with a lot of the rule changes and just a lot of the way it's gone, the level of intensity that players are playing with, and just I think the level of physical skill and just a lot of these things just from the opportunity in terms of reps and practice and hitting whatever has really come down a notch, and especially in offensive and defensive line play. And I think that just comes from just less opportunity to hone your craft. I mean, as an offensive lineman, the only way that you learn your job is 9-on-7, fucking mouthpiece in, 100% intensity with some guy trying to fucking smash your head into the wall.
Right.
And I think like without those hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of reps in the heat, when you're tired 5 weeks into training camp and nobody wants to be there and everybody's pissed off and like, you know, you're fucking, you know, hair trigger ready to go, that's where you learn your craft. And I think when they really have really backed away that type of intensity because they don't want guys getting hurt with concussions and injuries and salaries and whatever. And if they want you to get hurt, they want it to be on game day. I just think that guys aren't able to hone their craft the same way. And I think you're starting to see that changing of the guard. And I think that's where you start to get it.
No question. I agree with you 100% on that. And I think, you know, I just interviewed not too long ago, Joe DeCina from Spartan Races. And, he talks about the frame of reference. You know, and it's like, you know, how hard is it compared to, you know, freaking, you know, a guy doing 100-mile freaking ultra marathon, you know, how hard is that 2-hour practice? You know, how hard, you know, if you compare it to something, and unless you've had something to compare it to where you've gone through a 2-a-day practice, or back in our day, a freaking even 3-a-day practice, you know,
sure.
You don't really know. And so I think that that's, I think you have to show your athletes. And sometimes, you know, I talk a lot about having to throw the physiology textbook out the window sometimes and just show your athletes what they're capable of doing. Doesn't mean you do it every single day, but I think you got to show it every once in a while.
Yeah, I was fortunate. I played for a guy named Tom Cable, who is the offensive line coach for the Seattle Seahawks, and he was head coach for the Raiders. He was my offensive line coach when I was at Berkeley. And anybody that knows Tom knows that he's a crazy person. His level of intensity is far beyond what other people even can fathom. And when he was my offensive line coach, which is hilarious now I think about it. Yeah, I think he was 28 or 29 years old. I was 18, and you know, he's about 10 years older than us, and he was an absolute crazy person. So I knew that when I left college after playing for Tom Cable, that there was never going to be a situation that I would ever be presented in life and in the NFL that would be as hard as what we did in college. And I know that seems like a weird statement, but I'm just telling you, with the shit that we did and the level at which we did things and the intensity and like his whole demeanor and just everything about what we did in training camp and whatnot, I knew that there was never going to be another person in my life that would ever drive us and push us, and the type of things that we did would ever be as hard. So when I went to the NFL, there wasn't a single thing that they could ask me to do. There was not a single practice. There wasn't a single, you know, 118 degrees in Kansas City in the middle of the heat. We played in the hottest game in NFL history. There was nothing I was ever going to do in football that was ever as hard as what we did in college. And I think like that little bit of like kind of, knowledge in the back of my head was extremely beneficial.
It gives you a confidence factor that you can't replicate anywhere else. I agree. Yeah. You brought that same intensity, you know, that you did as a player to you as a father, as a business owner. Talk a little bit about, you've got, however many different companies, you've got all these different things going on. Talk about work-life balance and how you, as somebody that's a type A driven personality, but also wants to be the best husband and father that can be. How do you balance that?
Oh man. I really wish I had some amazing piece of insight or knowledge on that. I just kind of, and this is really funny, I kind of gauge my wife as a barometer. If my wife seems pretty good, like I feel like I'm on a good track. Like yesterday, I got up and I power washed all the concrete because they're doing a bunch of construction up there. And then I came down and I was like getting ready to do some power washing and a bunch of stuff up down here. And like the power washer broke, it was like leaking oil. And so like everything's like just all day yesterday was basically just doing yard work, and I like had to cut the grass. I mean, there's a bunch of shit to do. And I remember my wife was like, I could see she was a little pissed off about something, and I was like, so what's going on? And she's like, oh, nothing, like, you know, we're gonna go take the kids and I got invited to go take the kids over to a friend's house to go swimming. And I was like, oh, okay. So I just shut everything off, went in, got dressed, and I went swimming with them and left everything, which was probably not the right thing to do in terms of like all the work I had to get there done yesterday.
Right.
But in terms of like my family going and taking the kids swimming and, you know, going out and hanging out and doing those things. So I found, if you gave me the opportunity, I would work 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, whether it be on Power Athlete or, some of my other hobbies. Like I really got into like, welding and fabricating and like, building of like, off-road trucks, just as kind of a hobby. Cause I always liked, big aggressive diesel trucks. And so
yeah.
I couldn't find people to necessarily work on and do what I wanted. So I kind of got into that a little bit. And so, that kind of pursuit, especially working on, some of the vehicle things and things around the house. And there's a bunch of projects, we bought 16 acres out here in Austin. And so there's always something to do. I could have a full-time job just managing this place. So if you gave me the opportunity, I would just do nothing but work and grind all day. And, on occasion, I have to constantly like take a step back and look at it from my wife and my kids' perspective and not be an absentee father. And, right. Yesterday, like shut it down, let's go swimming. And, that stuff will get there. So I think as a success or necessarily as a goal-driven individual, there's this idea that I have to get everything done right now. I got to meet this deadline. And then as soon as I meet this one, there's another deadline to hit. And so you're always running from deadline to deadline. And I think at some point you got to say like, you know what, fuck it. I'm going to go and I'm just going to blow it off and I'm going to, go out and I'm going to do what's, best for my wife or my kids or my family at that point. And so I kind of try to really balance it that way. And my wife's also really good. She's a great barometer where she's like, hey, we got to do this. And sure. When my wife says, hey, we got to do this, I know that I've gone a little too far or I've gone in this direction. So she's really good in terms of like kind of helping me steer the boat a little bit, because I mean, I'm not kidding you. Like I always joke, like if they ever went on vacation, she even said it. She's like, if I went on vacation, what would you do? I'm like, pretty much exactly what I'm doing now. Like I would literally just have a grind. And pretty much the only reason that I don't work all the time is because she's like, hey, we got to eat dinner, we got to do this. And so she's pretty good about giving me a heads up on these things. So
sure.
I just think when you're a goal-oriented individual, there's always a new goal every single day to meet. I think you just have to have somebody there that provides you a little bit of perspective, or you're just going to be a workaholic, which I don't think is a negative thing. I mean, people talk about, workaholics as so terrible as a workaholic. And I'm like, geez, if you look at everybody that's ever, you know, created anything or been successful or really doing or really, you know, good at their task, they've really, you know, grasped onto it and been workaholic and really focused on it, that you just can't get good at stuff just being ancillary and just doing it occasionally. So
I agree. 100%. Yeah, I agree. We talk about the seasons of life, you know, and so when you're young and hungry and you're chasing your dream, I mean, it's going to be skewed maybe 80-20, you know, where you focused 80% on your profession and 20% family and whatnot. I mean, the difference, I think, how you balance it is, you know, when you're at work, you're 100% at work, and when you're at home, you're 100% at home. You know, and that may only be 80-20 or, you know, or later in life, it might be 20, you know, skewed the other way. But you have to be, you know, you have to be present. I think that's the most important thing. And it sounds like you're doing that on a daily basis. You know, with Power Athlete, it's an exciting time. Like you said, you moved.
I'm fighting for it.
Say that again. Can you hear me?
Oh, no, you paused out on me. Yeah, I
can
hear you now.
With Power Athlete, you guys are, it's an exciting time. I mean, you just moved to Austin, Texas not too long ago. You're building a new facility. You got the academy coming out. Talk a little bit about the things that are going on with Power Athlete and all the educational initiatives you got going that coaches might be interested in.
Yeah, I mean, so like I said, we moved from Newport Beach out here to Austin. I had this vision of, you know, finding a big piece of land somewhere and being able to actually build a facility and be able to do everything on the property. And unfortunately, I couldn't do that in Newport Beach. And, you know, we were renting multiple facilities and you know, driving to and from. And I just couldn't find anything that really fit what I wanted. And so I had to start looking other places. And so we had a great opportunity to move out here. And so we've been building a new facility, and we got a, you know, office on the property, and just it's been really exciting. But really, the big move was we've been really working. I mean, it's just a little bit of history on us. I mean, obviously, I started you know, teaching the CrossFit football seminar and a website, and that really evolved into Power Athlete. And just having taught hundreds of seminars around the globe to literally tens of thousands of people, there just became, you know, a lot of truths and just a lot of common threads. And unfortunately, one of those common threads was just a lack of knowledge. And it just became, you know, when you have 13 to 15,000 micro gyms and people that, you know, don't follow the Kwai Chun King, Jeet Kune Do method of training, where they, you know, travel and work with the world's best and then figure out what works and what doesn't, that, you know, they're out there working with athletes and they're using, you know, like we said, they might only have a hammer or a chisel or a tool or whatnot. And so we needed a way to go back and educate people at a higher level in kind of a non-traditional sense, because it's not as if you're going to own a micro gym and then all of a sudden decide to go and be Ron McKeefrey's intern for the next 2 years and, you know, right, suck the merit of his training. So we needed a way to educate these guys, and we worked for the last 2 years on how to, you know, effectively do this. And at the time, there really wasn't a delivery method that we liked, and so that kind of steeped or stalled us out a little bit. But then we were able to find a really kind of, as technology improves, a really great delivery method on how to do it. And, you know, we've run a couple tests offline of education pieces, and I think we really tripped over it. We didn't really do it well the first couple times, but after just refining and seeing the problems that kind of people needed, and we went back and we basically have created what's called our Power Athlete Academy with our methodology level one, which is our first offering, which is an online course where, you know, there's about 6 hours of video, 150-page course manual, reading list, tests, and we're really going back and looking at a learning method that we knew could work. You know, me having a background in education, I student taught, and just really the pitfalls that I saw for students in being able to be successful went into that. And then, you know, Tex and Luke is especially coming in, and, you know, Tex really being the you know, the saving angel of this thing and coming in and really just taking all this information and putting it into a digestible format. He did an amazing job, you know, going back and really just taking this knowledge. So we've launched it, and you know, it's this it's a pretty cool deal, man. We open up just a initial test. So we did like a pre-registration of like 100 people, which I think over half is sold out in the last couple of days. And we're gonna launch this thing June 1 and really take people through it. And once they complete the methodology, then for them to become Power Athlete coaches, they have to actually come out here to Austin, Texas, the reason we're building a facility, and go through an in-person seminar, what we really call our Block One. And the reason it's called the Block One is the Power Athlete coaches and I are actually we'll handcraft in the shop. We'll make small little blocks that are emblazed with our stuff. And then if you come in and you earn your block, you get your block. And I just never liked the idea of a certificate hanging on the wall. I always wanted something, a more physical representation. So I was talking to the boys and they were like, what do you want to do? I'm like, dude, let's make blocks out of steel, out of different metals, and we'll see what we like. So just a fun team building event. Awesome. And I like crafting. I like building. I like fabricating and metal and different, different mediums with wood and different things. So it just kind of fit in. But that big in-person deal is based off this idea of like education. So we're going to bring people in. We want to have like a meet and greet and get to know people and then have somebody like a Ron McKeefrey come in and speak and, do like an education piece where they could come in and, talk to an influencer and somebody that's kind of been there and ask the questions, but not necessarily in a seminar kind of deal, but more like a roundtable discussion, and then go through, get some training involved and start kind of seeing these guys in more of a, training environment. And then the next day would be actually bring them in and, put them through the curriculum, ask them the questions, do some Socratic method, get them to demonstrate movements and start learning and developing their proficiency at not only teaching movements, but the power athlete method. So we're really just launching this first piece, but as I took a step back, I wanted to make a college course. Like, here's the information I need you to learn. Here's all the great information. And then at some point you got to come and test for it. And, I didn't want it to be cheesy. I didn't want it to be like kind of a multiple choice question. I wanted you to come in and actually show me and present to me and show me that you understand this thing and on a granular level. And I think the only way you can do that is if you're using it and you're really kind of steeped in it. And while that sounds like a higher barrier to entrance, I don't want people to just check boxes. I don't want people just to hang a certificate on the wall, because it's not going to be a certificate. So they actually have to earn their block. And I think for me, I don't want, if there's a million people that did it, I don't necessarily know if that's a victory. I'd rather have a small collection of people that are intelligent, that are passionate, that are really steeped in the information and understand it on a granular level and can use it and have, come out and, worked with us. And I think at that level of, personal experience and kind of a personal touch point, I think it works for me. And a big thing I've always worried about is, when you start providing a lot of education and doing a lot of these things, a lot of things get lost in translation, and it just becomes a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy to the point where you don't even recognize it anymore. And so I don't want that to happen. I want everybody to have a direct touch point with me and the guys that are, I've really been the heart and soul of this thing. And I think a one-to-one touch point is what I feel comfortable with. So at this point, I think it's pretty exciting. It's pretty much what I've always wanted to do, and it's the level at which I think people need to do this stuff.
Yeah, I got a chance to preview it, and I would echo that 100%, that it's very digestible. It's something that's set up in a way, and the very first couple of lectures, I learned quite a bit, and so I would highly recommend it as well. And I love the freaking block idea. That's fantastic. Well, hey man, we end the show. Go ahead.
Oh. Oh no. Yeah, it cut out a little bit. So go on.
I said,
did we hit our time?
No. We're good. We end the show with some resources. You give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
I think the best piece of coach's advice I've ever received was, have a plan. But don't be so, so rigid that plan can't change. I mean, and I'm sure you've run into this a million times where, you program something, you have an idea what you want your athletes to do. And within like the first 5 minutes you come in and you completely throw it out and realize this isn't going to work today.
Right.
And I think the best coaches that I have had, enough understanding and knowledge to like have a plan, but weren't so rigid that they couldn't make changes on the fly. I worked with coaches where here's the plan, hell or high water, we're going to execute this. And I don't care if everybody, blows every tendon and ligament and dies out there. This is what we're going to do. And that's a very, football-ish, football coach. Like, here's what we got to do. Here's the plays. Here's what we have to do. Regardless of how we're doing, we're going to do this. And I think as a strength coach, if you are not flexible enough to be able to make changes and start kind of, throw out the plan and find a new one and really, be, I guess, enough to be able to, get your guys where you need to go, I think you're going to really struggle. So, be smart enough and intelligent enough to have a plan, but don't be so rigid and so uncreative that you can't make changes on the fly based upon what's presented to you.
Yeah, that's great. We're going to link up, you know, Power Athlete HQ and everything as well, the podcast and everything, but give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Book. I'll, in terms of strength conditioning, you know, you can't go wrong with Science of Practice programming with Sadaskorsky or, some of her, anything by, Berkoshansky, especially if you get on there and Google, because he used to have a forums when he was alive and there was some really amazing stuff. I'll definitely throw out, if you want an interesting resource for not only strength conditioning, but life and information, you can check out my blog, Talk to Me, Johnny, which is, a couple hundred blog posts of this stuff. But in terms of like one of the books that I've read that was so impactful in terms of how to kind of navigate things, Green's 48 Laws of Power is pretty great.
Yeah.
And for apps, I really like, what's it called? I really like Buddhify, which is a meditation app, which I think sounds pretty funny about it, but something I try to listen to every night before I go to bed, that idea of like, how do you calm things and do a little bit of meditation. And I think while it kind of sounds like some new age hippie bullshit, I think when you are a type A personality that's always on, you have to sometimes find ways to really kind of decompress and turn off really quickly. And for me, just doing some basic meditation stuff where apps is really good to kind of calm the noise and get me to relax. So I think those are great. And anything that you're passionate about. I think, people don't really know what they're passionate about, so you got to go out there and search for it.
Right. Well, brother, it's been fun, man. Like I said, we connect on so many different levels, and I've been honored to be on your podcast a couple times now, and couldn't wait to get you on ours, and just appreciate what you're doing. I mean, I know what it takes to put out resources and to do that, and the amount of work that goes into it. You and Tex and Luke and the guys do a phenomenal job with that. And I highly recommend y'all's materials. And then I highly recommend you guys that are listening attend Summer Strong this year, where John will be speaking. And the dude's just a freaking wealth of information. So I appreciate you coming on the show, brother.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And you're going to be at Summer Strong, right?
I am on the Friday. I'll be there Friday, and then I got to get back. Awesome. My half-brother is graduating on Saturday, so I got to get back. But we'll be there for the first part.
Sounds great. Well, I look forward to seeing you again. And thank you very much for the opportunity. And, I'll see you soon.
Awesome. That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.